Okay, we're continuing along in the Kuzari. Last week we had talked about the discussion of miracles. And he says that the miracle of the Red Sea and all that happened, we're on page 104, the splitting of the water, its suspension in midair, and the pathways created for the Jews in the middle, all these miracles are attributable directly to God. God required no tools or intermediaries to accomplish all this, unlike human beings. Rather, the water stood in obedience to Hashem's command alone and was sculpted into pathways by Hashem's desire alone. And this relates to the words that Hashem uttered to the Jewish people at Har Sinai. God is able to create sound waves that form words by the time they reach the prophet's ear, and those words convey what Hashem wants to communicate to the prophet or to the people. I mentioned to you last time that in connection to the whole concept of the Ten Commandments, we talked about this dialectic in the thinking of our great rabbinic philosophers of the medieval period, this tension that exists between immanence and transcendence. Is God close to us, or is God elevated above us? And there's advantages and disadvantages to each approach. Because when we create a transcendent God, the objective, of course, is to create this perfect and ultimate being, and that's really what the objective of elevating Hashem, to create that sense of reverence, the Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, that sense of awe, right? And that's the Rambam's project. And in so doing, he creates a God that is far elevated above creation. The disadvantage of that approach is to create a God that is detached from our reality and that does not insert himself into the physical world. So that's the disadvantage. The other approach is the approach of Rabbi Yehuda Halevi, which is the God of immanence, the God who, immanence, I think it's like a philosophical term. God is close, he is nearby, he is present in our lives. That creates a sense of intimacy, a relational kind of God, but at the same time it removes that transcendence, that aspect of awe and reverence that the Rambam is trying to create. Now we also pointed out that there's a philosophical reason why the Rambam insists upon the emphasis on God's transcendence over God's immanence. And we had gotten started on this Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that I'd like to continue with today. I don't know if everyone has a copy, but if we could share, that would be great. There's an extra one over here if anyone needs. And we started this Mishnah last week. We'll just go a little bit further. Asara devarim nivru be'erev Shabbos bein hashmashos. There were 10 things that were created just as Shabbos was coming in. HaKadosh Baruch Hu got this just under the wire before lich benching. Ve'elu hein, and they were as follows. Pi ha'aretz, the opening of the earth for that was swallowed up Korach. Upi ha'be'er, the well of Miriam that miraculously provided water for the Jewish people for the 40-year sojourn in the desert. Upi ha'asam, the mouth of the donkey that spoke to Bilam. Ve'hakeshes, the rainbow that was, you know, that God produced after the flood. Ve'haman, and the manna that fell for the Jews for 40 years. Ve'hamateh, and Moshe's staff with which he performed miracles. Ve'hashamir, and that special worm that was used to cut the stones of the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'haktav ha'michtav ha'luchot. And these three things are something that the Rambam himself will have to explain. They all relate to the giving of the Torah. Ksav, michtav, and luchos. We'll explain what those are. Ve'yesh omrim, some say af ha'mazikin, some say even demonic spirits or injurious forces were also created at this time. U'kvuraso shel Moshe, Moshe's burial site. Va'ayalo shel Avraham, the ram of Avraham that was used as the surrogate, the substitute for Yitzchak after Hashem told him not to sacrifice Yitzchak on the Akedah. Shel Avraham Avinu. Ve'yesh omrim af tseves v'tseves asuya. And some say that the first set of tongues, like we said last time, the first set of tongs could not be manufactured by man because you need tongs to manufacture tongs. because in order to forge metal, you have to hold the metal that you're forging with something that itself is made of metal. So it's a never-ending, it's a catch-22. That's the term. It's a catch-22. How do you make the first set of tongs unless HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides you with a set of tongs to begin with? There is probably something very metaphorical in that last phrase. We'll talk about that in a minute. But let's first take a look at how the Rambam understands this Mishnah. Now, there's nothing compelling us to read this Mishnah as a philosophical discussion about God and the way that he performs miracles, but that's precisely the way that the Rambam understands this Mishnah. So we'll take a look. He says, Kavar zacharti lach b'perek hashmini. I've already explained to you in the eighth chapter. Now, what the eighth chapter means is that the Rambam wrote a very famous introduction to Pirkei Avot called Shmona Prakin, the eight chapters. And in the eight chapters, he describes certain principles of ethics and certain principles of the way that Chazal present certain teachings. And he writes that I've already explained to you in the eighth chapter of these Shmona Prakim, these eight introductory sort of essays on Pirkei Avos, Shehem lo ya'aminu b'chidush haratzon es achar es, that our sages do not accept a belief in God inserting himself into creation and altering things. Now, here the Rambam is revealing to us a philosophical principle that he feels is very important in order to properly define God's transcendence. And that is that God doesn't do anything on the fly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not given to whim or to change his mind or anything like that. When Hashem created the world, he put everything into motion with the full foreknowledge of everything that would ever happen throughout history. So to suggest that HaKadosh Baruch Hu one day woke up and decided to split the Red Sea, or one day woke up and decided to cause man to fall for the Jewish people, would be in some way a diminution of Hashem's stature in relation to who he truly is. God doesn't do anything by sort of just like you and I, we decide one day we're going to turn left instead of turning right because there's a roadblock. There, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has control of the entire creation from the time of creation. And therefore, it was it doesn't seem to be reconcilable to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performs miracles over the course of human history, because that seems to suggest that Hashem is inserting himself in creation and changing the way things were normally originally meant to be, and Hashem decides, no, I'm going to make a change. Yes.
How would the Rambam explain the flood?
How would he explain a lot of things?
Yeah. God decided to bring the flood because of the evil of man.
Yeah, and it even says, Vayinachem Hashem ki asa esa adam ba'aretz, that God relented, or God had remorse, he had made man. So the Rambam would have to understand that metaphorically, and that God was very sad, but he knew, he foresaw that this was going to happen. But that God doesn't have remorse about anything, because if God's the creator and he has perfect knowledge of the entire future, he knew when he created man that man was destined to corrupt itself and that he would have to bring a flood and start all over again. It is hard, but there's even midrashic material that lends itself to this Rambam as well. The Medrash seems to suggest that God creates pretenses for man to sin, which is an amazing statement. It's in the Medrash Tanchuma, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu sometimes orchestrates human history, even when he knows that he's sort of putting people in the position where they have to do a sin. And it's very, very controversial and has to be understood properly, because this suggests a sense of determinism that doesn't even allow for human free will. Uh-huh. So it's a problem. Yeah? Sure. Of course. So of course this gets into the whole issue of what is predetermined and what is not predetermined, and how much does this human action play a role? This is I gave earlier in the year a 6-week series on Ishbitz Chassidus. So if you were there, great. And if you don't remember, go back and look at it on Kosher too. But that was really, the 6 weeks was all about determinism versus free will. How we reconcile the two. If Hashem is in charge of everything and has perfect knowledge beforehand, then he creates a world where everything has already been orchestrated and choreographed. down to the exact letter. So where does human free will come in, and what is, and how does human initiative possibly change anything if everything was already preordained? So there are a number of different ways to answer that question. It's a very important question, and it seems to be a question that has been a question for ages. It's been a question throughout the ages about trying to understand the way that God interacts with our world and what role we play in being able to create changes. So I'm not going to answer that question right now. It's a valid question, but realize that there are a number of different approaches to this. The reason why we did this in the course of our classes on Ishbitz Chassidus is because the Ishbitzer takes the extreme position of determinism. And he says that even when we think we have free will, we really don't. We're going through the motions, but everything, he says, "Akol bidei shamayim, afilu yiras shamayim." That even though the Talmud says that everything is in the hands of heaven except for the fear of heaven, he says even the fear of heaven is in the hands of heaven, which is, you know, sort of shakes you a little bit to the core. But you have to understand that we have to act as if we have free will and that we can change. Even whether or not we actually are causing change of our own volition or not, or whether we're just characters in a movie that's already been scripted, that's really not for us to get involved with. God gave us a role to play, and we have to play that role, whether we find it, whether it's a real role or whether we're just acting. Yes, did you want to say something? Okay. Okay. So, but you see that the Rambam takes this position as well. Ela shebereshis asiyas hadevarim. That when everything was created at the very inception of their coming into existence, embedded within every created item that Hashem put into this world was all the nature, the entire nature of that created item was embedded within it at the time of creation. God never changes anything over the course of creation. Bein shehaya hadavar sheyaset hadir v'hu hadavar hativi, u'bein shehaya li'itim rechokos v'hu amofes. And this is, it doesn't make a difference whether the nature of this thing that we expect a certain phenomenon to occur on a regular basis, or whether something changes miraculously every millennium or so, which would be called a miracle. He says, but nevertheless, everything that would, the nature of every created component of creation was embedded within it from the time of creation. So you see, therefore, where the Rambam is going with this. He says, "Ulaficha chamar," and that's why it says, "Shebeyom hashishi husam ba'aretz shetishka b'korach ba'adaso." On the sixth day of creation, God had already put into motion that the earth would open up and swallow Korach. It was not a new creation that Hashem decided to introduce to the world at a specific period in world history, but it was put into motion from the time of creation. That's really, explains Rambam, what the theme of that Mishnah is. That God actually created, when he created the earth, he created that it would have a certain, at least in that area, the desert, in the Sinai desert, Hashem created within that portion of earth that it would, a fissure would open up at that particular moment when Korach was standing right there with his entire family, and it would open up and then it would close right afterwards. That was all it was all embedded within creation at the time of creation. Okay, ubeveir shetotzi amayim, the same thing was true with the special well of Miriam, that it would miraculously out of a rock would come forth water. Uva ason shetadaber, and that the donkey would talk, the chen hashar, and all of the other things listed in the Mishnah. And then he goes on to explain, he says, what is the word ksav? He says that the ksav is the non-physical Torah that God had with him even before he created the world. That was also, or that it was at the sixth day of creation. And he says that was sort of with Hashem at the time of the letters, of course, of the Torah were, I guess, formalized or crystallized at the end of the sixth day of creation. Michtav is the engraved letters that were placed on the tablets, and the luchos themselves are the tablets. Okay, but let us go to the next paragraph. Vishema tomar, maybe you'll ask a question. V'im hamofsim kulam husmu b'tid'i, osam hadvar mishesh yisimei bereshis, if everything in this world was put into motion, and everything that would occur to phenomena in the world was put into motion in the 6 days of creation, lama yuchadu eila ha'asara, then why are these 10 items specifically singled out? Why isn't the splitting of the Red Sea part of this list? You know, you went through, if you go through the list, nowhere does it discuss the splitting of the Red Sea. Nowhere does it discuss the miracle of the sun stopping in the mid-sky during when Yehoshua was waging the war in Gibeon. Why aren't those phenomena also listed? All miraculous phenomena should be listed. Why not the 10 plagues or anything like that? He says, Da, Sheheim lo yuchdu lomar she'en sham mofe shuhusam peteva hadvar mishesim ibereish zula seila. This mission is not telling you that these were the only things that were put into motion at the time of creation. Ela amar she'ela bilvad ha'ita asiya sam ben ha'shmashos. But rather, all this mission is telling you that it was only these 10 things that sort of like came at the end of creation. However, ushar hamosim omnam husmu b'teva hadavar asher nasu bo bereishis he'asoso. But all the other things, all the other miracles that were embedded in creation, were embedded earlier in creation at their appropriate time, depending upon the phenomenon or the object that is the object of the miracle. So he'll give you an example. He says, Lamashal, Amar ki bayom hasheni ba'es hecholkos hamayim, husam b'tiv'am sheyibaka yamsuf l'moshe v'hayardin l'yoshua v'chein l'eliyahu v'le'elisha. He says, for example, when God decided that the Red Sea was going to split for the Jewish people when they crossed the Red Sea, or that the Jordan River was going to split when the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael with Yehoshua, or that the water would split for Elisha and Eliyahu when they crossed the river, these things were embedded in creation on the second day of creation. Because what does it say on the second day of creation? That God created a division among the waters, Yikavu Hamayim. That let the waters create divisions. So when God created divisions of waters, that's when he created the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea, because that was the appropriate time for him to embed within the nature of water to split. And he says in the same thing, Kishanivra uvayom harevi'i, Kishanivra hashemesh, hu sambasha ta'amod bizman ploni b'ma'amar Yehoshua la. And then when God created the sun on the fourth day, that's when he told the sun, You know, in about 2,000 years from now, O sun, or 2,500 years from now, I want you to stop in your motion, and for just a few hours until Yehoshua wins the war, and then you can keep on going. So that's what was put into motion with the sun at the time of its creation on day 4. V'chein shar hamofsim chutz me'ilah ha'asara. And the same thing was true with all the other miracles, except for these 10. One of the questions that Rabbi Menachem HaMeiri asks, Rabbi Menachem HaMeiri was a French rabbi who lived in the latter part of the 13th century, and he was known as a Maimonidean, meaning that he was a rational thinker just like the Rambam. He subscribed to the Rambam's rational school of creating a transcendent God. So he says, I agree in principle with the Rambam's sort of depiction of God putting things into motion at the time of creation because of God's transcendence, and God doesn't do things on the fly. He says, but I don't think that's what this mission is talking about. He says, because for one thing, one of the questions that he has on the Rambam is, well, what about the mouth of the earth that swallowed for Korach? You know, when did God create the earth and the trees and the grass and all of these things? Well, God created a division of water on day 2, and that's when dry land emerged. So either on day 2 or day 3, God could have embedded within creation the opening of the earth. So he says, I don't understand, according to the Rambam's own reasoning, why some of these 10 are on the list. What makes them special that they have to wait until Bein HaShemashot? Yeah. So then, yes?
No, I was just thinking, in a way, the whole thing is semantics, because miracle, nature, if we say Hamachadesh v'tuvo v'chol ma'aseh bereishis, that Hashem is renewing even things that we think are nature every day, it's a miracle if the waters part on their own, and it's a miracle if the Red Sea splits. Everything's a miracle. You want to call it nature, you want to call it a miracle. If it's all from Hashem, it's all a miracle.
Yeah, I agree with you. Everything in life is a miracle. What you just quoted is the Ramban. The Ramban says it's at the end of Parshas Bo. The Ramban says that the whole purpose of the miracles that God performed at the Exodus is not for us to be awed by the miracles of the Exodus, but rather for us to be made aware that it's the same God who splits the Red Sea is the same God who makes the sun rise every day. So when we read the stories of the accounts of miracles in the Torah, it's supposed to inspire us to realize that it's this very same God who makes our heartbeats every second and our lungs fill with air every time we take a breath. And that's what the miracles of the Torah are supposed to inspire within us. But you see that the Rambam takes a markedly very different approach. See, there are, in line with this whole idea of God's involvement with our universe, the Ramban takes a more Kabbalistic approach that every single moment of the existence of this world is a brand new creation. If you can imagine for just a second a film that is made up of separate frames, the Ramban and others like him understand that God is constantly recreating and recreating and recreating. To the point where for the Ramban, if I were to take a little red rubber ball and throw it up into the air and then catch it 5 seconds later or 2 seconds later, that's not the same red rubber ball that I threw up. In other words, along the way, God created an infinite number of red rubber balls that shifted in their position so that by this, the time I catch the red rubber ball, it's a totally different ball that Hashem created for this particular second of existence. That's markedly not the way the Rambam understands. The Rambam takes the extreme opposite approach. And of course, it's all a question of, again, God's involvement in the world and how much of in control HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in the course of creation. There are philosophical difficulties to both models. But at least we understand where the Rambam is coming from. His motivation in explaining this Mishnah in this fashion is to reaffirm the transcendent nature of Hashem, that Hashem is not associated with our physical world in a way that he can just insert himself into physical time and space. And that's the reason for the Rambam saying this. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi is much more of a Nachmanidean than he is a Maimonidean, even though he precedes both the Rambam and the Ramban. But his approach is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu directly inserts himself into physical time and space. Yeah.
Let me bring it there to Dibros, and Shmos, it says, Asher, that God, created the world, and in Bez Hanan, it says, Asher, it's from the Eretz Yisrael. We always learn that just to contrast the fact that...
Oh, you mean you're talking about the...
Yes, Eretz Hadibros.
In the fourth commandment, the commandment of Shabbos.
No, when you believe in God...
No, the Anochi is the same in both places.
Okay, but I forget, maybe it was Shabbos, the one that God created the world, and one that God took us out of Egypt.
Yes, correct.
So I always learned that the first one was to show God created the world, but we also say that he took us out of Egypt to show that he is constantly changing the world for us. Plus the fact that we believe in Hashkafa Pratis, seems like he wouldn't really believe in Hashkafa Pratis then, if God is...
No, but that's the strange thing about the Rambam, is that he does subscribe to Hashkafa Pratis. And it's interesting because the Rambam says explicitly in the Moreh Nevuchim and the Yad also that God is providential. The one thing that he does point out, though, is that the level of providence depends upon your awareness of Hashem. So really, it's dependent on the degree to which HaKadosh Baruch Hu's providence is over you is to the degree that you are aware that Hashem is running the show.
That, again, is contradictory.
Well, it's... The Rambam himself says, at some point, how can it be that human beings have free will when God has already predetermined everything? And his response to that question is, in very uncharacteristic fashion of the Rambam, because Rambam usually gives answers to everything, he says, this is something that the human mind just simply cannot process. And he quotes the pasuk in Yeshaya that says, Ki lo machshavosai machshavoseichem v'lo darcheichem derachai no'um Hashem. My thoughts are not your thoughts. Your ways are not my ways, says Hashem. And so even though for the human mind there seems to be a disconnect between free will and determinism, for Hashem there is no contradiction. As a matter of fact, the way the Ishbitzer explains it is that within every miracle, there's a double miracle. The double miracle is that the laws of human logic are really also a construct, our creation of God. What you feel in your mind needs to make sense, only needs to make sense because God created your mind in such a way that it's hardwired to configure things in the way that your mind thinks. But outside of the constraints of your mind, there really is no contradiction between free will and determinism. between the fact that you can decide that you have the ability to change things when God has already predetermined everything. Yes? I'm sorry.
If I did, like, the word create, Hashem created the world for a certain person. Let's say, Hashem created the whole plan for Hanashah. Okay? So it depends on the way that you are. Depends on your feel like it is. Depends that you can change the plan that Hashem gave to you because your level or your tefillah, what you are doing when you are davening, if you are changing your spirit, if you are changing your soul, if you are changing your neshama, Hashem, the way that He creates the plan for you,
you become a new person.
You become a new person.
That's right. That's your traditional explanation, is that the reason why prayer has efficacy is not because God needs your prayer in order to change things, but rather God says, I have a blessing waiting for a person who has said these particular prayers. And in order for me to be able to give you the blessing that I would like to give you, you need to transform yourself into that person.
Okay.
That's exactly right. What we're discussing is the philosophical dilemma of, did God know that you were going to change in advance or not?
Yeah.
Did He already put into motion from the time of creation that He was going to give you that blessing, knowing that you would pray? And if so, did you ever have the choice not to pray? Yes.
So just going back to that Rambam and the question of other phenomena that are not listed, I think my understanding, and I just wanted to clarify, my understanding is that Rambam's trying to, you know, show the preparatory and predictive nature and transcendence of God. And so what I would suggest or was wondering was something like having Moshe's staff in there would sort of blanket cover a lot of the miracles that happened at the time because it was embedded in that staff and didn't have to list all of the different things with the Malkut and all of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a good answer.
That maybe
I didn't think of that.
It was sort of just that little blip, or also Noah's rainbow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are a lot of these things, but it leads me to also wonder about, you know, this list and how it sort of doesn't have anything that could be used in modern time, in futuristic time.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder if that's sort of an example only and not that sort of list of things, because there could be miracles in our future that...
Absolutely. These are examples of things that don't seem to fit into the normal scheme of things. That's what the Rambam seems to be saying. And there could be a number of ways to interpret this mission. I'll just give you an example. The Meiri himself, who subscribes to the Rambam's thinking, but says that he has a totally different interpretation of the Mishnah. He says that this Mishnah really is talking about the destiny that Hashem created for the Jewish people at the time of creation. It's got nothing to do with the general discussion of a deterministic God and a transcendent God, but it's really the topic or the subject of this Mishnah is Klal Yisrael, is the Jewish people. And that while we think that we have determined our own destiny as the Jewish people by making free will decisions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has actually been guiding us along the path of human history to make sure that we emerge as the chosen people and eventually emerge as the people of ultimate redemption and messianic redemption. And so he says that these are all things in the course of human history which Hashem inserted within creation in order to bring us to a point where we would become the chosen people. And that's why he says it's all of these miracles. You know, there were times at the very beginning when we could have been totally destroyed, when Korach came along. You know, Korach was very, very threatening to the future of the Jewish people, because after God took us out of Egypt, when Korach came along, he basically tried to undermine the whole experience of the Exodus. And he tried to tell everyone that, no, this is just a fluke, you know, and you're all on your own. And so God had to orchestrate the earth opening itself up from the very time of creation to make sure that the Jewish people would not fall into that trap of Korach, and that we would be able to realize our destiny. Because the whole world's existence is predicated upon the emergence of the Jewish people as the chosen nation. And if there would be certain things along the way that could impede that emergence from taking place and from us getting into Eretz Yisrael and building up our land and then becoming the people of all human history, the Jewish people will never be allowed to disappear from the face of the earth. And that's what the theme of this Mishnah is for the Meir. This is another beautiful idea, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu basically, even when we're our own worst enemy, and we shoot ourselves in the foot by making poor decisions as a people, Hashem is always there making sure that the things, that the traps that we fall into will not cause us to disappear from the face of the earth. But anyway, be that as it may, that's really the dialectic that we were discussing when we talked about the way that Rabbi Yehuda Halevi approaches miracles versus the way that the Rambam approaches miracles. Rabbi Yehuda Halevi very much in line with the Ramban, that God inserts himself into creation constantly, and the Rambam saying that no, that God is removed and transcendent. So let us, all right, let's, well, I guess we'll hold it here for today.